The National Broadcasting Company, in the interests of the American system of radio, presents American Portraits, written by George H. Faulkner. The title of our final play in this series of eight dramatic portraits is Keepsakes. And in Keepsakes, we shall hear Carl Swenson as Abraham Lincoln.
Mr. Lincoln, sir?
Yes, child?
Would you write my autograph album, sir? Just a few lines?
Why, certainly. Let's see now. As usual, my desk pens need sharpening.
No, I brought one with me. I'll cherish it always, sir. As a keepsake.
And I will have trouble matching that compliment. Well, now, let's see. Dear Mary Delahaye, with pleasure, I write my name in your album. Ere long, some younger man will be even more happy to confer his name upon you. Don't allow it, Mary, until fully assured that he is worthy of the happiness. Your friend, A. Lincoln.
There are certain old poems, old stories, old books, clocks and jackknives, old rose and lavender keepsakes with musk and dusk in them, with the sunset smoke loitering in the faded shine of their walnuts and mahogany stain and embellishment. And we learn them by heart. We memorize their lines and outlines and put them away in the chests and attics of our memories, keeping them as keepsakes till the next time they'll be wanted. They will always be wanted again. In thousands of American homes after Abraham Lincoln's death, keepsakes tinted with the glory and tragedy of his name were kept and preserved from the touch of time. About the year 1883, in Pittsfield, Illinois, a 13-year-old boy named Oliver Barrett began to collect these Lincoln mementos, for Pittsfield was and is Lincoln country. All his life long, Barrett kept up the quest. Today, his collection is a priceless treasury of the American past and a joy to every Lincoln scholar. Let us move about among the treasures. Here, for example, is a leaf from the arithmetic or sum book used by Lincoln as a boy. And on it, the boy wrote,
Abraham Lincoln, his hand and pen, he will be good, but God knows when.
Autographs in pen and ink are common enough. Seldom do we meet a name carved by jackknife in an axe handle. The pioneer youth at New Salem, Illinois, it would seem, did put his name, the year, and his home village on an axe handle. Here it is. Ollie Barrett found it somewhere. And here, too, for what derivation may be made from it, is a stone. A stone dug up in 1890 by the grandson of Abe's good friend, Bowling Green. On the stone, a legend has been chiseled.
There, it's done. A. Lincoln, Ann Rutledge, betrothed here, July 4th, 1833. About time, too. Looks like we might have a thunder shower.
I reckon we better get back to the picnic grounds and the speech making.
Should we tell a man? Should we tell all the folks back there?
Why not, Abe?
Oh, Lord, Ann, I still can't believe it's true.
But it is true. I've known it, Abe, since that first day I saw you. Remember where that was? Of
course I do. I reckon I remember every time I ever set eyes on you, Ann.
Where was it then?
Well, right in your father's tavern. Uh-huh. First meeting of the Literary and Debating Society. The night I was too bashful to say a word, hardly.
I remember. I came and sat down next to you. The corn's getting high, isn't it, I said. And you said, sure is. And then you sprawled out there, looking at your hand.
Couldn't figure out what to do with the man. All of a sudden, they got to be a problem. Couldn't put him in my pocket, setting down. Yep, up until that moment, I reckon I never knew I had so many hands. And no tongue at all to speak of.
You found your tongue, though.
Oh. Once I get started, I can speechify, all right. I talked my way right out of the state legislature last election.
But everybody in New Salem voted for you.
Well, not quite everybody. A few folks had sense.
277 votes out of 300. Oh, they know you here, Abe. They know you're going to be a great man. Just as I know it.
No, Ann. You know I'm a failure. You know I've been a failure at everything I've touched. Right now, the store is on its last legs, just about ready to wink out. All I own is a mess of debts.
And a mess of friends, Abe Lincoln.
Creditors, most of them. Ann, how can we ever hope to get married? Why should you want to marry anyone like me?
Abe, sometimes I just don't understand you at all. A few minutes ago, you were all brightness and smiles, wanting to carve that stone. He's happy, I thought. I've made him happy. At last, he's really happy. And now?
It was the stone, Ann.
It was what?
I didn't mean to tell you. The stone in my hands, it was so cold. I reckon I shouldn't have told you.
But I don't understand.
All of a sudden, just when I finished carving it, come over me. Something said, it won't happen, Abe Lincoln. It'll never come true. And then I touched that stone and it was cold. Like ice, burning cold.
Why, Abe.
And I'm like this. It's happened before. You mustn't pay no...
Yes, there is a storm coming. Abe. Oh, Abe.
Yeah, Abe.
Hold me, Abe. Hold on to me close. Never let me go.
I won't. I won't let you go. Not ever.
We'll bury the stone. We'll bury it. We'll hide the cold stone where it'll never be found. And we'll be married. In the spring, we'll be married, Abe. And wherever you go, I'll be with you. Always, Abe. Always. Always. Oh, hold on to me. Hold on to me.
Yeah. Yes, Ann. Wherever I go, you'll be with me. Forever.
Within the year, Ann Rutledge lay buried beneath another cold and humble stone. For weeks, young Abe wandered darkly, refusing the solace of friends. But slowly, as the days passed, some order of control came back to him. Only it was said that the shadows of a burning he had been through were fixed in the depths of his eyes, and he was a changed man, keeping to himself the gray mystery of the change. And here among Oliver Barrett's keepsakes, the record of the changed man is kept on yellowed scraps of paper in ancient newspapers, ancient letters. A letter, for instance, written by one Matthew Marsh in New Salem to his folks back east.
The postmaster, Mr. Lincoln, is very careless about leaving his office open and unlocked during the day. Half the time I go in and get my newspapers and so forth, without anyone being there, as was the case yesterday.
Letters are here from the young legislator at Vandalia, from the circuit riding lawyer in Springfield, the new capital. Here's the watch he later gave to Dennis Hanks, his spectacles, and here, folded and refolded, fragile as an air from an old-fashioned spinet. Here's the poem he wrote out for the singer Lois Newhall.
Oh, why should the spirit of mortal be proud? Like a swift fleeting meteor, a fast flying cloud, a flash of the lightning, a break of the wave, he passeth from life to his rest in the grave.
Not always sad, of course. Laughter flashes more often than woe among these relics of Springfield days. A New York client writes asking Lawyer Lincoln about the financial standing of a Springfield neighbor. And he replies,
"Yours of the 10th received. First of all, he has a wife and a baby. Together, they ought to be worth $500,000 to any man. Secondly, he has an office in which there is a table worth $1.50 and three chairs worth, say, $1. Last of all, there is in one corner a large rat hole, which will bear looking into. Respectfully, A. Lincoln."
And here is the latest of Oliver Barrett's hoarded treasures, a recently discovered Lincoln speech. Speech made during the senatorial contest with Stephen Douglas. The exact date and place of delivery of the speech are not given, but we can imagine the scene. We are outside the courthouse in a small Illinois county seat, late in an autumn evening. The courthouse doorways are lighted by kerosene flares. It's dark along the sidewalk, where citizens wait and gossip, waiting for the speaker to arrive, listening to the band.
"Yeah, I hear Kelly Tide. Judge Douglas up in Hard Knots over there in Galesburg last week."
"Depends on what paper you read.
Yeah.
Jim Beale here, he heard them both go out of yonder Nelton. Think Abe stands to show, Jim?"
"If it was up to me, he would. There's something sure about it. Sure and comforting."
"How do you mean?"
"Well, when I went over to hear him at Alton, things looked uncertain. I had troubles, home troubles. Feared like I had more than I could stand up under, just too much. But he hadn't spoken more than 10 minutes before I felt like I never had no load at all. My load was lifted."
"Well, maybe so. What gets me is he's goddamn ugly. If they was running for the ugliest man in the state of Illinois, he'd win hands down. Abe Lincoln looks more like an ape than a sander, if you was to ask me. And what's
Shut up, short. Here he comes.
"Evening, folks."
"Howdy, Mr. Lincoln."
Couldn't help overhearing the last remark of my handsome friend here. "Howdy, friend."
"Now, don't you mind Shorty Johnson, Mr. Lincoln. When we run out of skunks around here, we whistle for Shorty."
"Oh, I don't mind. I reckon I'm like the man I heard tell of over Indiana way. He was riding along a narrow trail on horseback when he meets an old lady riding the other way. Well, the old lady says, 'For the land's sake, you are the homeliest man I ever did see.' 'Yes, ma'am,' he says, 'I sure am homely, but I can't help that.' 'No, I suppose not,' she says, 'but the least you might do is stay home.' Well, so long as I didn't stay home, you boys might as well come along over to the courthouse and hear a few homely words from the ugliest man in the state of Illinois." "Now, my countrymen, if you have been taught doctrines which conflict with the great landmarks of the Declaration of Independence, if you have listened to suggestions which would take from its grandeur and mutilate the symmetry of its proportions, if you have been inclined to believe that all men are not created equal in those inalienable rights enumerated by our Charter of Liberty, let me entreat you to come back. Return to the fountain whose waters spring close by the blood of the Revolution. Think nothing of me. Take no thought for the political fate of any man whomsoever. But come back to the truths that are in the Declaration of Independence. You may do anything to me you choose, if you will but heed these principles. You may not only defeat me for the Senate, but you may take me and put me to death. While pretending no indifference to earthly honors, I do claim to be actuated in this contest by something higher than an anxiety to office. I am nothing, Judge Douglas is nothing. But do not destroy that immortal emblem of humanity, the Declaration of Independence.
When our government has an important message to get to the people fast, it uses radio. Network radio is the only way to reach everybody in the country in a hurry. The same speed and coverage which make radio vital to our national welfare have made it invaluable to American business, too. When there's a new product to be launched, a new territory to open, a new price to be announced, it can be done the same day on radio. And no other medium of communication talks to so many people at such a low cost. The speed, the economy, and the persuasiveness of network radio. These are the reasons why America's leading advertisers present your favorite programs each week on NBC. We return to Keepsakes, a portrait of Abraham Lincoln drawn in terms of the Lincoln mementos gathered by Oliver Barrett and described in Carl Sandburg's book, Lincoln Collector.
Then the war years came. Their burdens and vexations and small gleams of light are reflected in hundreds and hundreds of Oliver Barrett's keepsakes, an orderly snowstorm of little papers, each signed A. Lincoln.
General Grant, your three dispatches received. From what direction did the enemy come that attacked Griffin? How do things look now? A. Lincoln. Honorable the Secretary of War, my son Tad wants some flags. Can he be accommodated? A. Lincoln. It is ordered that the death sentence be commuted. A. Lincoln. My dear Mr. Kroc, allow me to thank you in behalf of my little son for your present of white rabbits. He is very much pleased with them. Yours truly, Abraham Lincoln. Major Ramsey, the lady bearer of this says she has two sons who want to work. Set them at it, if possible. Wanting to work is so rare a want that it should be encouraged. A. Lincoln. I believe I need no escort, and unless the Secretary of War directs, none need attend me. A. Lincoln.
His friends worried because he would ride unescorted on a horse called Old Abe 3 miles each evening from the White House out to the soldiers' home where his family were avoiding Washington's heat. And perhaps the one who worried most was Ward Hill Lamon, Lincoln's particular friend, his Harry Hopkins, a guardian, confidant, privileged jester, and at times a musician. Here in the Barrett collection, we find Lamon's name signed to a program for the dedication ceremonies at Gettysburg as Grand Marshal. The name may call to mind perhaps an evening in the wartime summer of 63 in Lincoln's White House office.
Oh, come in, Ward. Come in.
Evening, Abe.
Glad you could come. Glad you brought the instrument. But that's about all I am glad about.
News bad, Abe?
Worse and worse, if possible. Lee's loose again. He's heading north.
Ready for a little music, maybe?
Later, Ward. First, I would like to ask you to deliver a strong and hearty kick straight to the seat of my pants, metaphorically speaking.
Well, that's the only way I'd think of doing it, Mr. President. But why would you want
Ward, to... Ward, you see, it's like this. I lost my $8 plug hat.
Well, I don't see what
It's more the way that I lost it that gives me the flusters. That's why I sent for you. I've been shot at, Ward.
Where? When? I warned you.
Yeah, I know you did. You warned me. That's why I asked for that manner of speaking kick. Yeah, it happened last night about 11. I was riding along on Old Abe out toward the soldiers' home, sort of brooding about things in general. Somebody took a pot shot at me, not 50 yards off. Well, one Old Abe took off on four skeered legs, lickety-split, and t'other Old Abe hung on for dear life, losing his valuable hat in the process. We got home safe, but tuckered.
And so you make a joke of it.
What else can I do, Ward? What else can I do? It's laugh, fool, or die. Oh, my friend, my friend. Why do they hate me so? Here, look. Look at those letters. Half of them berate me for a villain. Good many of them threaten to kill me. Why do they hate me so?
Because they don't know you, Abe.
Ward, I tell you, no man has been cursed as I've been cursed. Day in, day out these past 3 years. North and south, north and south. How the newspapers rave. Heartless gorilla, they call me. Blaspheming buffoon, deformed idiot. Worse, much worse. Now, bad news from Meade, Stanton's mule-headedness. Married, nagging, nagging, nagging. Yeah. You're right. Music. Music. I can't cut loose. I can't ever lose hold on to myself. And the music helps.
A blue tail fly, Abe?
Yes, yes, that'll do it. That'll help. Especially that last verse. He died, and the jury wondered why. The verdict was the blue tail fly. Ward, you know, for sheer and total absence of meaning, that line takes the prize. That's why I like it. Too much meaning in everything I do. Well, first some music, Ward, and then, if I can, a little sleep. No. No, I guess not. No sleep yet.
What was that?
Oh, now, don't get worried. That's just my son, Tad. Ought to be in bed, but he... Yeah. That's Morse code. Tad learned it over at the War Department telegraph office. Probably wants to read the dispatches or show me his pet rabbit or drill the White House guard or plague me for a Navy sword. Come in, Tad. Come on in, boy.
And then, out of the horrible burdens, a victory note. A note re-echoed here in the endless archives of Oliver Barrett. A telegraph form dated April 2nd, 1865, inscribed Headquarters, Armies of the United States, and filled from edge to edge with A. Lincoln's scrawl.
Lieutenant General Grant, allow me to tender to you and all with you the nation's grateful thanks for this magnificent success. At your kind suggestion, I think I will visit you tomorrow. A. Lincoln.
¶¶
April 2nd to April 14th, 1865. 12 days. From victory to... well, fill in, if you will, these 12 last days with the keepsakes time has cast up in the cases, the files, the shelves, the portfolios of Oliver Barrett's collection. What price a pair of beaded moccasins with the initials A.L. in wrought wherein the feet of Nancy Hanks' son trod the White House corridors? How would you begin to set a value on this silver watch, this gold watch chain, this pearl-handled pocket knife with A. Lincoln silver inlaid in the pearl? This Bible presented to A. Lincoln by the colored people of Baltimore. This quill pen. Or upon this shawl, worn by Miss Laura Keene, actress, during a performance of Our American Cousin on the night of April 14th, 1865, at Ford's Theater in Washington. Or this curtain torn from a box at Ford's Theater on that night. Or this blood-stained fan found in a box at Ford's Theater on that night. Or this piece of soiled wallpaper from that same box. Or this key to the box itself. Or this piece of pasteboard, this ticket, this box ticket, this passport to eternity that bears the legend, reserved. Reserved for... You may do anything to me you choose, if you will but heed these principles. You may not only defeat me for the Senate, but you may take me and put me to death. I am nothing. Judge Douglas is nothing. But do not destroy that immortal emblem of humanity, the Declaration of Independence. We hope that you have enjoyed American Portraits over the last 8 weeks. We've talked together about matters of importance. We've been able to do so because we are what we are, a radio network. And a radio network is a great web of contacts spanning this entire land, touching now or then all peoples at all times. From the farmer starting his day at dawn to the young girl at a party, radio reaches everybody. And radio advertising sells all markets. Not only can advertisers talk directly to you by using radio, but it costs them less than other methods. For example, a manufacturer could reach 3,696,000 people in newspapers, yet for the same money, he would reach about 8,200,000 people, over twice that number, if he sponsored the average fall show on NBC. Yes, network radio is a bargain to advertisers. It is also the only way to reach a truly national audience with the human voice. Advertisers spend money with NBC because they wish to reach the greatest possible number of people for the least possible cost and with the force and persuasion of the human voice. You've been listening to Carl Swenson as Abraham Lincoln and Kermit Murdoch as the narrator in Keepsakes, the last in NBC's special series of 8 American Portraits. Keepsakes was written by George H. Faulkner and directed by James Harvey. Our music was conducted by Milton Kadams from an original score composed by Alan Shulman. American Portraits has been presented through the courtesy and cooperation of the editors of Cavalcade of America, which returns to the air next Tuesday night at this time. This is Ben Grauer inviting you to listen next week when Cavalcade will present Towards a New World with the well-known Hollywood and Broadway star, Basil Rathbone. Now hear Brian Donlevy and his dangerous assignment on NBC.